today's show. Chip Kelly goes from UCLA to Ohio State. What does it mean for Ohio State? What's it mean for UCLA? Plus, am I a degenerate for going to Power Slap 6 in Vegas? I vote no.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Nobody was tampering with Chip Kelly, were they? There's no way he had a conversation with anybody, right? Just filled out an application.
Russ Dellinger.
I think you two is there. Garth Brooks is there. Dan, there's plenty of other things to do in Las Vegas, much better than watching people slap one another.
And SI's Pat 40.
You go to UCLA's campus. You go to the practice fields. It's 80. It's perfect. Everything about campus is great. You're like, why don't they have 70 great players running around?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Chip Kelly gave us some news last week. His quite dedicated quest to not coach the UCLA Bruins next year.
Success.
5 years yeah. Success. He's hell-bent on not coaching him. I think that was pretty clear. Sure. Applied for every job in football, except for like the University of Akron, defensive analyst job. Didn't get around to that one. But he is leaving. He's the head coach at UCLA, where he's making $6 million a year. And he's coaching UCLA to become the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. We'll make about $2 million. Got a 3-year deal there. That said, we don't know how good his team was going to be next year. He's 35 and 34 at UCLA, 26 and 26. In the Pac-12, had three decent seasons, 8-4, 9-4, 8-5 the last 3 years. Real tough first 3 years. Looked like he was going to be fired. Got it turned around somewhat, but, I mean, if you really look at last year's team, one ranked win over Washington State. They did, though, give a beatdown to USC. That was a big moment. And beat Boise State in a bowl game. So the program wasn't bad, but then wasn't great. I his recruiting was not good going into next year. Who knows? Certainly was not the fanfare that everyone was expecting after he had gone 46-7 in 4 years at Oregon, including 33-3 in conference play. But he makes a unusual move, and this is an unusual guy. And I feel like every time something happens in college football, everyone wants to point to whatever narrative they have. And I'm probably guilty of that also. So everyone's like, oh, my God, we have a head coach at one school in now the Big Ten leaving to be the offensive coordinator at another school. And I would agree that is a eyebrow raising event. I just think Chip Kelly is oddball enough to want to do that. But, Pat, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on Chip making a move from UCLA to Ohio State to be a coordinator under Ryan Day, who was once his quarterback at the University of New Hampshire.
Right. It's a stunner. I mean, in a vacuum, if you take the personality out of it, I agree that if anybody's going to do something this weird, it would be Chip. But it still is a move that people don't make. In college football, this could be a stew of like six different factors involved here. You know, he very well could be reading the room and saying, they're going to fire me anyway next year. You know, he saved his job twice in 2 different years. He saved his job by beating USC when he was very much on the hot seat, and he would go into the season on the hot seat as well. He may say, you know what? I'm tired of just trying to stay one step ahead. He may be looking at it and say, you know what? Yeah, we're not very well funded for NIL. I can't get people on board on that, and we're going to fall behind. He may say, my God, UCLA, we're going to the Big Ten. We're going to get our ass kicked. The travel's going to be brutal, et cetera, et cetera. And then it could also be just Chip Kelly moves to a different beat, different drummer than anybody else. And I want to go coach ball someplace with the best players, which you darn near going to have at Ohio State this next year. So there's a lot of things, you know, that could all be factored into this. What they, you know, if hopefully at some point Chip's going to have, they will have an introductory press conference, you know, maybe before spring ball up there, because I think it'd be really interesting to get him to articulate, if he will. Sometimes coaches don't want to tell the truth, but it'd be great to hear what he thinks and why it didn't ever take off at UCLA the way everyone always hopes for it to, and it never really does. But he seemed like the guy to get it done, and he didn't get it done. So it's fascinating move. I don't know whether it's a commentary on college football. It might be a commentary on UCLA. Might be a commentary on Chip. I don't know whether it's a commentary beyond that.
Yeah, I think Pat hit on most of the points there of why he would have left. It is a stunning move, and I don't know that we've ever seen it. I think Gary Anderson was the one that maybe did something similar, left a Power 5 head coaching job for an assistant job. I believe he's the only one in the last 20 to 30 years that I can remember, you know? So it was stunning, but when you look at some of the issues that Pat mentioned, it makes a lot of sense, right? He was going, you know, UCLA probably isn't as prepared to go into the Big Ten as Chip and others would like, you know, from a roster perspective, in an NIL perspective, in the budget. In general, you know, and then you look at all the things that are going on off the field in college athletics, including NIL, in the roster management, all that stuff, and you wonder if, as Pat mentioned, a coach just wants to coach, right? Just wants to do the X's and O's again and coach players hands on, because if you're a head coach right now, especially at the major college level, guess what? You're probably not doing as much coaching as you want. You're probably more of a CEO. And it's funny because Chip goes to a place where the head coach, Ryan Day, is taking a step back from coaching, you know, and Chip will probably take some of that responsibility. And it's because we're in an era of college athletics that where you need to be more of that CEO, roster manager, recruiter, whatever you want to call it. And then in we're about to evolve college athletics into an even greater world of that. And so all those factors probably contributed, most notably, right, that UCLA is probably going to struggle next year. And Chip would have probably been fired. So maybe that's the strongest point to note.
Yeah, and look, this is not a guy who was recruiting well before.
Oh, excuse me.
We're gonna have the
Vegas.
We'll talk Vegas later.
Wetzel brought a little Vegas back in his lungs.
8 days in a casino. Inhale a lot of smoke. I mean, he just had like the 60th ranked recruiting class coming in. I don't know if he ever had a class that got higher than 25th in recruiting at UCLA. So even pre whatever you want to say, oh, it's horrible now. I mean, you look at some of these classes, 44th, 31. Like, this was not the perception when he got there was like, okay, the problem at Oregon is it's hard to get players to go all the way to Oregon. Well, you put this guy in Southern California, this many athletes, that kind of run game he sets up, innovative coach, high energy, all this stuff, a personality. I mean, it was a huge coup to get him. They beat Florida for Chip Kelly. Yeah. And it's a little why Chip Kelly is a different breed. Mm-hmm. Most people are going to choose Florida SEC power, a school that has won 3 national championships in the modern era, over UCLA, which has won 0 and hasn't, I don't think they've had a 10-win regular season this century. But Chip Kelly chose UCLA, so you're like, okay, here we go. And he doesn't recruit well at all those years. Never gets it going. And that, I think, has always held him back. So you sit there and say, well, he doesn't like recruiting in the he didn't like it too much in the past era. You know, it's not like this guy was inking great. I mean, this is UCLA. I get it, the Rose Bowl's not on campus and this and that, but like there's two schools in all, you could really argue there's two schools in all of California where you can play major college football. I don't, you know, I'm no offense to Cal and Stanford, but they haven't, Stanford's a totally different bird and, or tree. And Cal is back and forth, you know, but even Cal lands, you know, number one quarterback recruits. The whole state, you're like, you want to stay home and play, let alone Southern California. We're one of the two schools in all of Southern California. Right? Like LA County alone is bigger than 41 states in this country. You ought to be able to get guys. No one else can offer home, stay home, let your parents watch you other than USC. There ought to be enough players for the two of you to be pretty good. And then you sell the rest of it. And he didn't do any of that. He didn't do enough of it. He'd get some guys, but it wasn't enough. So you have all of that as a problem going in. And I just think I'm looking at the schedule for next year. It's a totally different deal. So they open at Hawaii, then they host Indiana. Then they're at LSU. Oregon comes to town at Penn State. How's that for 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of travel.
Enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
Then Minnesota. Then they're at Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then they get at Nebraska. Iowa comes at Washington, USC, and then they end with Fresno, who could probably, you know, find me 8 wins there.
Right. No way.
Six?
Six.
Yeah.
Dante six. Moore left, you know, like, it, you know, yeah. The, like, that was it. Like, when he got Dante Moore, you know, as number one or two freshman, you know, recruit quarterback in the country last year. And he gets him out of Michigan, gets him out of Detroit. And there clearly was NIL involved in that. And I was like, okay, this is what, like, I think this is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Right? Here's a kid from Detroit saying, all right, I'll go to L.A. Cool. I don't want to be in the Midwest anymore. I'm going to go to L.A. I'm going to play for this guy, NFL coach, and a great, you know, and there's going to be some money. You know, it's not like you got to go to L.A. broke now. I don't know how much you get, but he had enough. I mean, I saw his Instagram. He wasn't riding a bike around town. And you're like, all right, maybe we're onto something. And then he's injured. The season doesn't go great, and he's off to Oregon. So I think the big thing with Chip was the writing was on the wall, and I just don't think he cares. Money isn't the biggest thing. He's got his place up in New Hampshire. He doesn't.
Right.
I mean, most everyone else is like, hey, man, pay me my money. I'll sit here, get fired, get all my millions from UCLA. I think he's just like, forget it. Let's just go do this. He was trying to get every job under the sun.
I mean, like, I was out there 2 years ago. They started 6-0, and they were good. You know, I mean, that Dorian Thompson Robinson, who's shown some potential in the NFL. Jake Bobo is in the NFL. Zach Charbonnet in the NFL. I mean, their offense was really good. Defense, not as good. But you go to practice, and Chip is a ball coach. That's the thing. And that's why him going to be an offensive coordinator, it's like, okay. Because that's his happy place. He wants to be out there on the practice field coaching the quarterback. This is going to be your progression. This is how you're going to look through this play. This is what the motion's going to do. You know, I mean, that's him. And you don't get to do enough of that now as a head coach, and especially if you're trying to swim upstream from an NIL perspective and other issues there. You know, you got a new chancellor coming in who may not like you. So he is absolutely wired for the football part of it, not necessarily for the rest of it. And there's so much more of the rest of it now. And yes, I mean, Dan, to your point, it is so mystifying. You go to UCLA's campus. You go to the practice fields. It's 80. It's perfect. Everything about campus is great. You're like, why don't they have 70 great players running around here every year? It has been an enduring mystery to me.
The football facility is unreal.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And Chip had that cameo on the CW's All American. Terrible acting, but great. Great marketing.
Dan's favorite show.
It was. It was. I lost it when I got lost in like season five. I need to jump back on, but the stories got increasingly ridiculous. But anyway. Go ahead, Ross.
I remember going there for the first time not too long ago, UCLA's campus, and touring kind of the facility and campus and seeing the football facility and open up to the practice field. Beautiful right there. Like, it's just all pretty incredible. And you do kind of scratch your head about why they've had such inconsistencies in success. And then you look at the attendance. Sometimes you look at the shots of the Rose Bowl and you're like, what in the world? I mean, sometimes there are like literally, 12,000-15,000 people in the Rose Bowl.
Averaged in the 40s, and that includes some sellouts. There's a lot of 30,000s, which look like nothing. Mm-hmm. The Rose Bowl is in Pasadena. It's beautiful, but that's at least an hour from campus.
Mm-hmm.
And at times, dramatically even more than that. And you're not getting the students to go. It's not a rah-rah kind of campus either. The kids go there.
Right.
They aren't necessarily going because of the football. Right. So it takes a lot of dedication to get people on a bus, get the freshmen there, that type of stuff.
That's part of this, I think. Mm. Dan, is the motivation from fans, which forever was always just kind of evaluated or determined by attendance and ticket sales, is now determined by NIL, at least right now in the NIL era, until we move on in the next year or so. And I think UCLA is maybe a great example. If you believe everything kind of you read and hear, which is hard to these days about NIL, but that they are behind drastically in NIL. And that's a good kind of, when you look at, fan interest for so long, we just looked at ticket sales, and now fan interest is even more important when it comes to managing and building a roster. And I'm sure, boy, you just love to pump some truth serum into Chip Kelly to get him to talk about that aspect of it. And I want to say, I mean, Chip is not necessarily completely devoid of any fault here, right? I mean, because a head coach has to lead in a lot of these schools. You see head coaches leading the NIL effort. Yep. And I don't know if we saw as much from Chip Kelly as that.
Let me say this, though. I'd like to know the truth about UCLA's NIL. Again, they did land the number one recruit in the country. Like, everybody's crying. Everyone says
they blew the budget, Dan.
That's then you shouldn't have spent it all on one guy.
Right.
All right? Okay? Well, like, we know what quarterbacks are going for.
Yep.
And you went in to Detroit and got a kid that everybody wanted. And he chose an 8-win program. So like, everyone says they're broke. That's the thing, right? Everyone's like, these other schools. I don't know. UCLA does not need 100,000 fans because they have people who have millions and millions and millions of dollars. They have a very wealthy fan base. So they can make up some ground there too. But, I totally get that there's, we don't have an NIL program going well. Well, that's fine, but how the heck did you get Dante Moore?
Yeah, that might have been bad budget allocation. I could see Chip saying, just get me a quarterback. I'll figure out the rest. And
I mean, Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame all wanted Dante Moore desperately.
Yep.
And they didn't get him. Mm-hmm. He chose to go to L.A. Oregon wanted him. He was committed to Oregon. They came in and flipped him off of Oregon. They got something.
Sure.
They got something. Anyway, let's talk about this before we get to the UCLA part again, because we're going to talk about it with their hire. What's the chance? Let's focus quickly on the Ohio State part. Yeah. What can he do? Bill O'Brien was there. We'll get to Bill O'Brien in a sec, too. He leaves for Boston College. Transitively, Boston College job now better than UCLA job. Congrats, Eagles. This is like the greatest win since Matt Ryan was around. Bill O'Brien leaves. They bring in Chip Kelly. So for the Ohio State, Chip Kelly's attribute is running backs, running game. You mentioned like Charbonnet. They had four straight years. They had running backs drafted. What's Ohio State's problem? If at least stereotypically, we're a tough football team. Where's Lou Holtz, right? Well, I think they get tougher with Chip Kelly. And they've got Quinshon Judkins. They have Travion Henderson. Do they become a better running team? There's certainly elite passing and wide receivers. Hartline brings them that. Maybe Chip Kelly brings them a running game. I think this could be very good for Ohio State.
Pat? I think it's fantastic for Ohio State. I'm trying to decide which was my favorite era, though. Bill O'Brien at Ohio State or Ryan Grubb at Alabama.
Really put their implant.
Long storied celebratory. Yeah.
Gold watch. Get the staff party down there. Yeah. Hug the crying secretaries. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for your loyalty to the program.
I'll always be a Buckeye. Bleed Buckeye forever. Yeah.
All 3 weeks I was here.
Turn back the comp car.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's fantastic. First of all, yes, the relationship with Ryan Day, I would anticipate them being very much on the same page. Those two guys are really close. As a matter of fact, I mean, small world, full circle, the day USC and UCLA went to the Big Ten, Chip Kelly was playing golf with Ryan Day.
That's true.
They should be on the same page. And again, Chip, elite ball coach. He's going to drop great stuff. He's going to understand the personnel. He's going to be able to put them in, I would think, formations, plays, all that sort of thing that will get the most out of them. Yes, Dan, they'll run the ball better, I think. You know, we'll see what they do with the line, but there's not any lack of talent there, and there shouldn't be a lack of commitment to running the ball. The question is Will Howard a great quarterback? Maybe he doesn't have to even be great, but is he a very good quarterback? And he has been for the most part at Kansas State, but still, I think that's going to be the X factor there. But I think this stands to be a yet another great offseason move for Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's go through the Ohio State's offseason. It's been about as good of an offseason acquisition-wise as we've seen in this kind of new era of college athletics. They got the number one overall player in the transfer portal, Caleb Downs. They got the number one quarterback in the transfer portal, Julian San. They got the number eight ranked quarterback and number one in running back in the transfer portal, and Quinshon Judkins. And then, as Pat mentioned, you know, Will Howard, number seven ranked quarterback in the portal. And then they got the last pickup, I think it was, you know, the center, Seth McLaughlin from Alabama. And then, of course, you pile on with a coach like Chip Kelly. If I had the AP poll preseason rank vote myself, I think the Buckeyes would be at number one.
Well, they also had a top five recruiting class and landed the number one recruit in the country, Jeremiah Smith, another great wide receiver. So, yeah, and then they had Chip Kelly. Yeah, they're having the off season that Michigan had the on season. So it's at what point does Michigan fans stop glowing in their excitement and go, wait a minute, what's going on down there?
Not until they have to.
I know. Don't. I recommend don't. Yeah, when you've won the national title, stop caring. Just enjoy it. But I think some of them already have. They're always eyeballing each other. But, yeah, you won the national title. But I'm just saying.
See, Ohio State wants to change the subject immediately to 2024. Michigan's like, oh, no.
Wait.
Long off season of gloating.
Yeah. Right. We're doing fine over here. They're always got to – you always got to talk about each other. Yeah, I think Ohio State, Georgia are your 1-2. I think the Will Howard question will be the big thing for how good is he. This is the one they targeted. This is the one they wanted. But, yeah, you couldn't do a whole lot. We said – there has to be a response to losing a third consecutive time. And they have responded.
Woo!
They have responded. Whether it works whether you now have to win at least three playoff games, whether, you know, in this new era, we don't even know how it's all going to work, all that stuff. We will see. But they have responded. If you're sitting there watching that Michigan win again, or you're watching the debacle against Missouri in that bowl game going, what happened to my Buckeyes? This is their answer. You can't complain about that. They have answered. So Buckeye fans should be happy about that. All right, back to UCLA, because they go out and hire Deshaun Foster, their one-time All-American in 2001 NFL running back. He's from Orange County, extremely popular player. It's been about 10 years as an assistant there, just left to become the Raiders running back coach. Obviously, bizarro time to try to hire a coach. It looked like they couldn't quite get an active head coach. Foster should keep the roster together for the time being, although I don't know how you transfer right now anyway. I think the late window will be a big thing. But the players like him. He's a young guy, knows L.A. Perhaps he brings more recruiting energy, which I think you actually have to happen. Here's the thing with coaching hires. I got no idea. No one has
a crapshoot.
When Chip Kelly went to UCLA, if we had had this podcast, whenever that was, I would have said, UCLA, man, they're going to be an absolute, like, they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to, I don't know if we had a playoff then, but whatever. Yeah, we had a playoff then. They're going to make the playoffs. Yeah. They're going to be great. Like, how would this not work? Didn't really work. So I can sit there and go, you just hired a running back coach who's never run anything? Probably not a good idea. Who the hell knows? So thoughts on Deshaun Foster and thoughts on what can UCLA be? I think we kind of touched on it. We still think there's a lot there, but anything on that? Pat, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, Foster, giant TBD. You know, may turn out great, may turn out terrible, maybe somewhere in between. We don't know. Obviously, extremely enthusiastic reaction from the team when he was announced and introduced. So that's always a good start. What that translates into, we'll see. He does have, certainly in the UCLA community and probably in SoCal, name recognition, some star power. He's not Deion Sanders in terms of star power, but he was a very good NFL player and a great UCLA player. I think, you know, you're going to need a lot of personality and charisma. You got to try to win back in recruiting that area, but you need the infrastructure to go along with it. You do need the NIL commitment. You need a staff that's going to help you go out and get people. You need, you know, an enthusiasm that goes beyond just the head coach's office and what does actually go probably to the fan base. And are you going to show up and turn this into an atmosphere that kids want to play in? So I don't know. I have no idea whether it's going to work. But, you know, in an era where you go get your X and O guys and you need a head coach to maybe be the galvanizer and the recruiting hub, we'll see if he can pull that up.
Well, I think Dan's question is a really good one. Like, what should be the expectations at UCLA? Like, how good is the UCLA job? How good can the program be? You know, if you look back the last 25 years, UCLA has finished in the top 25 at the end of the season three times in roughly 25, 24 years. So that probably gives you a little bit of an indication, you know, of that job and how difficult it can be. And it's about to get more difficult, as we just talked about, right? The Big Ten and the schedule. And let's look beyond NIL, just athletic budget situation at UCLA. You know, one of the reasons they used for moving to the Big Ten was that they were in the hole athletically, with budgets financially. Okay, well, the move to the Big Ten is certainly going to cost more travel. It's probably going to cost more when you look at investment in staffing, recruiting budgets in general. And then, guess what? You are going to have to pay Cal $5 to $10 million. Right. I don't know that they've set a number yet a year. back to Cal.
Forgot about that one.
For leaving.
I did too. Yeah, I love that. I mean, the UC system tax. Yeah, that's great.
The UC system board. The board made that ruling, I think, last year. And I think they were supposed to set an exact amount. I don't know what they have yet, but it was going to be between 5 and 10 million. So by the end of it, I don't know that moving to the Big Ten really is going to generate a whole lot more revenue, a whole lot more profit, I guess I should say, because it is going to generate more revenue, but you're going to have to spend more. This is a tough job. And I think that it's getting a lot tougher. It's one of the reasons Chip Kelly probably did leave. You know, he probably saw the writing on the wall of how difficult this job is going to be, and that he was on a short leash. So there's this is, I don't know what to compare it to when you look at teams in other leagues. It's not obviously it's not like a Vanderbilt or anything, but it probably is like a, as crazy as this is to say, it probably is like an Arkansas or Mississippi State. You know, if you're at that level in the Big Ten, you know, it's kind of the SEC equivalent.
I mean, if you made me make a prediction on how UCLA will do in the Big Ten in football, I think it's going to be a disaster. I think they're going to get crushed. We'll see.
We'll see. They definitely have a long way to climb to the top. It's just not, you know, say this to everybody who enters these leagues. Like, there's a reason the teams at the top of what league you're joining, they don't go anywhere. Like,
right.
Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State aren't going anywhere. If you're going to pass them, you're going to have to bring it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a year or two. Maybe there's a bad hire along the way, but check the records, man. So you're playing for fourth. And Wisconsin and Iowa, some of these schools, they ain't really going anywhere either. The formula is set. So it just becomes a hard process to get in. And I think that's what, like, when Nebraska joined, they're like, okay. It's like, yeah, that's great. You guys were doing really well over in that other league. Now you're in ours, and we don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Try it. Yeah. Try beating us out. We're not – these three aren't moving. So you're playing for four. Maybe USC's got enough juice. Let me say this. Two quick things. One, that rule where they got to pick Cal is my second favorite money rule. Other than the SEC, if you storm the field, you have to pay the team you stormed on. That's even better. You have to cut the check to Alabama. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. fantastic. That's my favorite one. I do think they will get more revenue. And here's one way they will get more revenue. I don't think they're averaging any 40,000 ever again.
Yeah.
Right.
Indiana Maybe. Plays this year. Minnesota plays there. Iowa plays there. Those are your three Midwestern. Now, the one thing about L.A., it is full of Big Ten alums. L.A. is full of everything. So, like we said, the county is bigger than 41 states. It's just a massive place. And that's just L.A. County, not even Orange County or whatever. So you are a Hawkeye alum, and you live anywhere in Southern California, and your Hawkeyes are going to the Rose Bowl on November 9th, you and your Hawkeye friends are going to that game. You may be rooting for Iowa, but you're buying a ticket from UCLA. I think that's going to be a fascinating situation, at least for these first few years when the novelty is there.
Indiana will bring at least 12 fans to that game.
Indiana will bring none from Indiana, but they will bring some people from LA.
12.
All right, we'll see. Maybe they'll wait for basketball. I'm telling you, I think there'll be a big... We have, like, our managing editor at Yahoo, Al Toby, right? Spartan fan. Anytime the Spartans are anywhere on the West Coast, he's like, I went to the Spartan Washington game. You know, like, they get so excited. They're going to go to these games. They'll root the other team, but whatever. You're going to get some, I don't know. It's better than what they've got going.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think it's a very hard job. This is it with Deshaun Foster. They have to get a recruiter. They have to get players, and they haven't. And, like, you're looking at this job since Deshaun Foster was a player. And they have had Bob Toledo, Carl Durrell, Rick Neuheisel, Jim Mora, Chip Kelly. The formula at UCLA was get a really good coach, right? NFL coach, X and O guy, like coach. The players will be there. These are not maybe Neuheisel, but the other guys are not known for their recruiting. Maybe Jim Mora, he knew who killed Tupac and stuff, allegedly. But they weren't recruiting. You got to – that hasn't worked. Maybe loading up on player, you know. So if Deshaun Foster can run around, it's still the place with energy. It's young. Get some guys. Hit the portal. Hey, look, you want to spend your last 2 years? How about out here in L.A.? It should be a great destination. Come finish your degree here. You know, elite academic school. It has so many advantages that it should work, but they've never just gotten the level of talent, pure talent that they need. And so as much as they are kind of the Mississippi State, or they're at that level kind of, Mississippi State does not have the ability to sit there and say, well, if we start dominating recruiting in our area, we can be the best. There are a lot of players in Mississippi, but there's a lot of schools right there. They only have one other school in the whole – really, at this point, there are two schools in the entire state of California that are playing major college football at any kind of reasonable level. Telling people to go to Cal and play in the ACC is not come on, right? So this is about getting players to me.
I mean, Dan – California kids, I'm sure, grow up wanting so badly to play a game at Wake Forest in Syracuse, in Boston College. I mean, come on.
I mean, these two schools, USC and UCLA, should be in the top 20. I mean, even more than ever, they should be getting guys.
We'll see what this conference affiliation, the Big Ten, help or hurt. I don't know.
And scouting. We talked about this, and we point this one out, but Mason Graham at Michigan, the kid from Anaheim, that Michigan, you know, Michigan sees on tape. They go offer. He's committed to Boise State. UCLA and USC hadn't even recruited him.
Right.
He's a freshman All-American, absolute monster sophomore season. He's going to be a top 10 draft pick next year.
I'm a little disappointed in Mason. I tried to get him to blast USC and UCLA at media day for the chant. No, wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Like, you know, there are players there. It's like, what are you doing? You can't miss this guy. He's 300 pounds and can move. He's in Anaheim. All you got, like, there's something was broken at those two schools. They have to get these local players. It is a phenomenal place to go to school. The Rose Bowl, it's not full, but it would be if they win. There's just too much to me to just write off UCLA. They just haven't figured out the formula.
I was told at some point in time during realignment here that UCLA is the most applied to school in the world.
It is. Number one most applicants. It's like 120,000 or something.
It's crazy. But yeah, obviously there's a ton nationally, but a ton internationally. A lot of Asian kids.
And in-state. Applied. Every kid in-state. Yeah.
The biggest...
It's the biggest state. Do you go get a UCLA education for in-state tuition?
Yeah.
Pat, you might know this. So don't they lead all schools in, like, you know, all-time national championships, like NCAA team championships, maybe?
I think Stanford passed them.
Okay.
But, two, and then it's like, you know, USC is third, and Cal is not far behind either.
Phenomenal place. Yeah. So we'll see. All right, we'll be back after this break. All right, Pat, you have an interesting note in one of your stories at SI about the vaunted coaching derby of 2018, right? When all these schools wanted to go higher, and it was thrilling. Who was getting whom? What do we got? And Chip Kelly was part of that.
Yeah, so like the 2018 coaching carousel was fascinating. A lot of big-name schools, a lot of big-name coaches involved. And guess what? It was a complete disaster. 21 hires were made at the FBS level. There's one guy still coaching at the school that hired him, and it's Mike Bloomgren from Rice, which says more about how much Rice cares or doesn't care than about Mike Bloomgren doing well. Because his record is 22-46. The only guy still standing in the same job is 24 games below 500. But you had Nebraska open, Florida open, Texas A&M, Florida State, Tennessee, And then on down the line, Mississippi State, Arkansas, Arizona State, Arizona, Mississippi, UCLA, Oregon, Oregon State. It was a, you know, a blockbuster year of moves, and none of them worked out. It's astounding. And, okay, what happened? Well, think about the factors that affected college sports or college football in that time. Pandemic caused a lot of mayhem. NIL arrives. Transfer portal opens up. Two-time transfers, realignment. Then you had the crazy stuff that actually mattered. Elijah Moore pretending he's a dog and urinating in a game that got two coaches fired. The Egg Bowl. The Florida player that threw a cleat and turned around the game against LSU and then turned around Florida's season the wrong way and ended up sending Dan Mullen's tenure down. Like, the guys that got hired and fired. Scott Frost. Everybody thought it was a home run hire, right? Chip Kelly, he didn't get fired, but he got pushed out. Yes, home run hire. Dan Mullen, everybody thought very good hire. Jimbo Fisher, national champion, changes jobs there, goes to A&M. Thought it was a good hire. None of them were good hires. Jimbo Fisher, as I said, Willie Taggart, Florida State, disaster. Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee, disaster. Joe Moorhead, Mississippi State, had a winning record, got run out after 2 years. Chad Morris never did a damn thing at Arkansas. Herm Edwards, his legacy at Arizona State, NCAA probation. That's it. Kevin Sumlin, disaster at Arizona. Matt Luke, bad stopgap hire there. He was an interim. They gave him the full-time job. Didn't work. You had a couple of people that left for better jobs, you could say, or what they perceived to be better jobs, and didn't get fired. Mario Cristobal left Oregon for Miami.
That was the one I was thinking. He didn't do that bad of a job. He set them up with players. Yeah, but I would agree with you. Yes.
Yeah. Jonathan Smith did the same thing at Oregon State. Elevated that job, but then realignment. Like, I'm out of here. Sonny Dykes was at SMU, went across the Metroplex, takes TCU to the national championship game. Josh Heupel goes from UCF to Tennessee. Billy Napier goes from Louisiana to Florida. Oops. Everybody on that one might think, gosh, I wish we could redo that. Napier was doing a lot better at Louisiana, and the guy they hired to replace him, Michael DeSormo, isn't doing well either. So, I mean, just amazing when you think of the amount of effort, thought, money, search buyouts. Firms.
Yeah,
buyouts. What a waste. Amazing. What a complete waste.
Amazing.
For truly, like, you know, we all know it now, being in this industry long enough. Like, it is truly a crapshoot, the whole coaching thing. Fit.
It is.
And record at previous school and whatever. I mean, none of these things seem to really matter. It's just a total roll of the dice. I was at the cleat game, Florida LSU season, and I was there to write a story about the hire of Dan Mullen and how he was hired at Florida. They were gonna play in the, remember, they had locked up an SEC championship game bid. And they were playing LSU to basically stay in contention for the CFP. And LSU was pretty bad and probably two touchdown underdog or so probably in that game. And the cleat, the fog, and the kick LSU ended up upsetting Florida. And so we moved my story on the hiring of Dan Mullen, how Dan Mullen was hired at Florida, to the next year, to the before the game against Alabama. Of course, you know, a few weeks later, he was fired. So on the same season as a coach was fired, we ran how he was hired. That was a great one by me. but that story, you know, dove into that hiring process, which, of course, as we mentioned, included Chip Kelly, Scott Frost, and Dan Mullen, all in that interview process at Florida. And I think many people around the program would tell you maybe privately that basically, you know, that basically Chip kind of turned the job down, right? The Florida job down. And it's funny if you think about, you know, the ifs and buts of college coaching and the carousel, if that would have happened, if he would have decided to take that job, where would we be? Maybe the same place. I don't know, but it's always fun to think about.
It is amazing how much speculation and commentary. Oh, good hire, bad hire. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
That's why I'm like, Deshaun Fox. I'm not going to be like, oh, that was a bad idea, Deshaun. I mean, people are like, oh, who? I got no idea. None of us have any idea.
Nope.
Jimbo Fisher.
15-0.
Jimbo Fisher, Chip Kelly, and Scott Frost. Like, there was no way all three of them wouldn't work out.
Right.
And I was pretty high on Dan Mullen at Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
I would probably put that in there, too. Like, those four hires, you're like A+.
Yeah. All four of them had arguably the best seasons in the history of their previous school.
Right.
A little more Jimbo, you know, because Bowden won two national titles,
still
too. But he did
title.
Win a national title. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you... Cross sticks UCF, perfect season. They claim a national title. Go ahead, as I applaud. Mm-hmm. Kelly made Oregon into an absolute beast and then had gone to the NFL. And he wasn't that bad in Philly. I covered some of those games, especially his first year. Yeah, I mean, amazing, amazing. All right. And we're going to get to the BC hire. We're going to get that to later in the week. We're going to talk Bill O'Brien and BC. We want to give that a little bit of time, and we don't want to go this late. Because I would give that an A+ hire, so look out, BC. I think it's a good hire. not good. turns out I'm often wrong. Go figure. Quickly, Ross, the temporary restraining order involving Tennessee, can the NCAA apply any NIL rules? What do we have? We have no stay. Do we have a stay? Does the NCAA still exist?
Well,
as
yeah.
of this taping?
For now, yeah. Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It's 10:45, almost 10:45 a.m. in the East as we're doing this on Tuesday. So keep in mind, by the time we talk about this, a ruling could have been levied. But the hearing ended this morning in the case brought by the Tennessee and Virginia Attorneys General against the NCAA in its NIL recruiting policy. The hearing ended. Both sides gave testimony. It was about an hour-long hearing in Greenville, Tennessee. No cameras allowed. I don't think any live tweeting either. It was really old school.
Take your cell phones, yeah.
So that's right. But reports from those on the scene are that it ended without a ruling. The judge said that a ruling will come in, quote, short order. Whatever that means, just talking to lawyers and folks that have been around, they believe that a ruling would come in the next 2 to 3 days, certainly by the end of the week, maybe by the end of today, by the time you're listening to this. And it's certainly a big case, right? It's the latest lawsuit, kind of antitrust lawsuit targeting NCAA policy. It would allow, you know, the attorney generals from Tennessee and Virginia are seeking an injunction to prohibit the NCAA from enforcing its NIL recruiting policy. So if it does get the injunction, if the injunction is granted, athletes would be able to legally receive inducements to move schools, even though probably plenty of that stuff happens now, right? It would be legal, completely legal for booster collectives to induce athletes and maybe even tamper with athletes.
I know.
But it's just, it's
nobody
the latest,
was tampering with Chip Kelly, were they? There's no way he had a conversation with anybody, right? Just filled out an application.
Do I detect sarcasm in your voice, Dan?
No way. Talk to his old, what do you have to like call back to New Hampshire? That's like some intermediary, like some guy who worked at the
Zip Recruiter. No doubt about it.
Yeah, Ryan Day called like the donut guy in their little town in New Hampshire they all live at. And then he's, hey, man, I talked to Chip. He's interested. Just tell Chip. Come on. All right.
Go.
Sorry.
Well, we'll see.
I couldn't resist.
I know. You did. I know. So we'll see what happens there. So hopefully ruling will come soon. And just another, another step from the courts and further basically crippling the NCAA's amateurism rules, which is why the SEC and Big Ten, right, have joined together to try to create some different model, because this model has been ruled time and time again by the courts to be illegal. Whether you agree with it or not, that's what the courts say.
Federal lawsuit could end up in the Supreme Court. They told them don't come back. So, yeah, see where this is headed. Other than that, not a big story. Just the entire. Glad we put it forth.
I did hear some armchair lawyering speculation that this is that it might be a hard injunction to get because the NCAA hasn't formally charged Tennessee. So, like, if they haven't even been charged, can you enjoin them to stop doing what they're doing?
That's true. So, they don't know what they're upset about. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so there's this stalemate. Does the NCAA, if you make the charge, you're going to get swatted in court. But if you don't make the charge, you don't get swatted. So what do we all just sit here in gridlock or what?
They're good at 5-year investigations. Are you kidding me? 7 years. Just keep getting the checks.
The most entertaining part of all of this, this case specifically, has been Tom Mars's Twitter.
Oh, yeah, he's fired up.
The latest is that he had someone, I guess, maybe in the courtroom and said that the NCAA brought 13 lawyers to the 13 lawyers to the hour-long hearing.
Deep bench.
One thing about the old school court reporting, I'll just tell the story. I will not embarrass this college football writer by naming him or her, but it was a him. A woman would not be so foolish. We're covering the Jerry Sandusky trial in Penn State, and this guy comes, and after the first session, there's no cameras in there. There's no recording device. I think they took our cell phones or whatever. And he goes when's the quote sheet come out?
ASAP Sports on it.
Yeah. And now there are transcripts. They come out that night, if not later, right? I'm like, my man, got to write down what they're saying. And you can't interrupt the testimony and go, could you repeat that a little louder?
Score will be right up, too, by the way. Box score coming.
The judge does not care at all. There's no SID going to be running interference for you. You have to sit there and write it down really quick as accurately as possible and hope you get it.
What a concept. Take notes.
Where's the quote sheet? I'm like,
that is hilarious.
Okay, not that. Briefly, I wanted to just say our condolences to the after the death of Toby Keith, the country music star. 20 number one hits in country music, including some real classics and a lot of good drunken sing-along songs. I mean, hey, that doesn't hit our alley. But the thing about Toby Keith was that he was a Oklahoma Sooner fan in the best possible way. Like, grew up an Oklahoma Sooner fan, got famous for his music, and did what I think anyone who grew up like that, he lived outside of Norman, and he was just at OU games all the time. Like, he's like, oh, my God, I can trade my celebrity into, hanging around the coaches and all that stuff. I mean, he would not just be at, hey, Oklahoma's in the football playoff, that kind of fan. You go to, Kansas State OU women's basketball game on a Tuesday night, and he might be there, courtside. And I think they sang Red Solo Cup the other day as an honor. True college sports fan, Toby Keith. I thought that was pretty cool. Pat, were you there when they sang the
– Okay. So I was there the day he died, or that it was at least announced that he had died last Tuesday. I was doing a 3-game basketball tour of the Big 12, and he's from Moore, Oklahoma, which is between Oklahoma City and Norman. They're all right there on I-35. And so, it was the very legitimately somber mood in the college town there, because he is such a fixture and had been. And so, he would sit on the baseline next to Joe Castiglione in Lloyd Noble Arena. And so after his passing, they had a guitar of his sitting in the chair, and they had a Sooner hat there. And Castiglione, he's everybody's friend, but he really was Toby Keith's friend. And he was kind of shook up after the game talking about it. And Porter Moser, basketball coach, came into the post-game press conference and lifted a Red Solo cup and said, I wish I had something stronger than water in here, but let's all, raise a cup to Toby Keith right now. And yes, that was not a celebrity fan. That was a fan who was a celebrity.
Yeah.
He was well legitimately put into it.
I saw a video of him surface. I think it was from either last year or the year before. And he was at Eskimo Joe's, the famous Oklahoma, the Norman spot. And, it was a single. He was in there, and he was,
Stillwater
was
spot,
singing
Stillwater.
One of his songs.
It's a Stillwater.
Still water. Ooh,
are they all over the state? Are they all over the state?
No, there's one Eskimo. Joe's.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Let's not confuse those two things, shall we?
Somewhere else.
But there was a sing along of, I think he was should have been a cowboy or one of his other hits, and he pointed at the camera and said, "You're not singing." What a guy. Yeah. What a guy.
Yeah. Always respect the real fan. I mean, they're all fans, but that guy, yeah, he lived it. He lived through OU and Sooner.
I grew up on two types of music on the Gulf Coast, Southern Gulf Coast. One was in the car with grandma, so it was 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the other was in the car with dad, which was 90s country. So
90s country,
Toby Keith was all over that.
There you go. All right, so no... Well, I'll people's court this. Why don't we people's court this? Okay. Pat's been heckling me about this. I was at the Super Bowl, spent 8 days in a casino.
We can tell, Dan.
8 days at the Luxor. Not recommended. 8 days in a casino is a long time. The secondhand smoke alone will kill you. The poor people that work there, someday they're going to have a class action suit against these casinos. Yeah, ringing casino bells. You open your elevator and there's like a frozen hurricane stand. Like it's an experience. 8 days, the Luxor with a giant Dorito painted on the corner. Giant Dorito. Not our most upscale of Vegas casinos, but it was fine for me. But I attended my new favorite sport, the Power Slap League.
God.
Power Slap, Dana White, Zuffa Productions, over at the Durango. It's very fortunate to go. Small little, we're in a conference center, but it's a Power Slap 6. I was a little skeptical of this. I'd seen it on social media. It was somewhat intrigued, but, not that. But, man, going in person, phenomenal. So I guess my people's court is, would you go to the Power Slap with me? If you don't know this sport, they basically, you line two people up across from each other. There's a little it's like a little stand, almost like the Family Feud. Like, you line up, but within slapping distance, obviously, instead of hitting the buzzer and you just line up and you just wail a slap into the other person and try to knock them out. And then if you don't, then they get a turn to smack you back. And it's three rounds, and then it goes to the judges' scorecard. No idea exactly how you get the job.
Judges' scorecard?
Yeah, judges.
Slapping expert judges.
I don't know where they found these people, but you can find anyone. Yeah, judges' scorecard. And then they got all these people around, like your Steve Harvey from the Family Feud. But they had a bunch of them who are catching you in case you get knocked down. You got to get over the violence, because it is violent. But
it hurts to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah, I sent you guys videos. I obviously I get over the violence. The violence does not bother me. I mean, they choose to be in this, right? Obviously, life, if you're in a slap fight, you probably made poor decisions at some point in your life to lead you to this. Like, you didn't, you're not like Harvard Law or slap fighting. It's probably not, right? So somewhere down the line, this is it.
Yeah.
But I'm fine.
Medium security or slap fight?
Yeah, slap fight. But you have questions, but I don't even know how to set this up. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I like it. I like it. I mean, I'm really in. I think it's great. I think if slap fighting, when it goes on the road, they're going to have another one in April in Vegas around UFC 300. But eventually they're going to take this thing on the road. Highly recommend. Get a little crew together. Go down to slap fight. You'll be highly entertained, is my opinion. Pat 40, do you agree with my assessment of the slap
fight? I will say
fighting?
This. So I think it was like Friday night or something. Dan, yeah, dropped a couple of videos into the group text there. And I showed them to my wife, and she said, "That is the stupidest thing I have ever seen." Dan she's did not even disagree with that.
She's not wrong. Trish was not wrong about that. It is. That's not the point.
So,
the Three Stooges is the stupidest thing I've ever seen, and I love it. Entertained millions of generations. Oh, they poked them in the eye again. That's funny. Like, it's good. Go ahead. I think I'm on trial in this people's court.
You are.
I'm counting on Sean to save me because I think you two are not going to.
Yeah, I'm not going on.
Here's
this.
The question. Am I a degenerate? Am I a horrible degenerate for going to Power Slap?
Did you bet on it? Yeah. Did you gamble on it?
I did not. I don't know if you can or can't.
Yeah.
You're still a degenerate for going. Sorry.
Thin strand of redemption there. But these people have got to be concussed after they get hit, right? I saw one of the woman that went down and, I mean, did the fencing thing. And it's like, the Hungarian
hurricane got concussed. No question.
The Hungarian hurricane.
Yeah. Sheena Bathel, right? She was the heavy favorite to win. So I would have did win because it was an illegal smack. They put too much palm into it. They call it clubbing.
What are the rules? What are the rules? How do you train for this? Do you train for it by being slapped in the face?
I don't think you can because their faces swell up really quick.
Yeah.
I think you just.
That's awful. Here's the problem. Here's the real problem with you deciding to go to this while you're in Las Vegas is Las Vegas offers plenty of other shows.
Not better than this.
You two.
You want to go to Carrot Top or something?
You two is there. Garth Brooks
Celine
is there.
Dion. Dan. I'm going to go to that.
Dan, there's plenty of other things to do in Las Vegas. Much
better than
people slap one another.
Brady,
you are a degenerate. The ruling is made.
No. Tom Brady was there.
Oh, well.
Is he a degenerate?
Right.
No.
If Tom Brady jumps off a bridge.
Yes, he is.
Charles Barkley was there.
That's right. Do you hear what Ross said?
What?
Just because Tom Brady's there doesn't excuse
if Tom
him.
Brady
condone.
He was there for like
bridge,
two
Dan's
fights.
Following behind.
Dana White. Saw Dana White, and then after like two fights, he left. And I was filming those. I was waiting to see Brady's reaction because I was like, this could be like really something. Like if he just like eyes pop out of his head watching this. And Brady is so smooth and so well trained. Like people are getting decked right in front of him, and he's just on post,
not flinching.
And imagine this: you're like, I'm in this slap fight league, right? And all your friends are like, what are you, an idiot? No, and it's like, I'm a professional athlete. I'm getting paid to be here. And and all of a sudden you're at your slap fight and Tom freaking Brady is sitting there 3 feet away. Like, that's the pressure. Like, hope I win.
I hope I don't get knocked cold in front of Tom Brady.
Where was this at?
The Durango Casino is in a ballroom. Johnny Manziel was there. Is Johnny Manziel the arbiter of high quality family entertainment?
You follow wherever he leads, follow Johnny.
I would follow Johnny. Absolutely.
You won't end up in trouble. That's for sure.
You had to see these guys though. Like we had these, like the nicknames. There was a guy named Dorian Disturbing the Peace Perez. Disturbing the Peace. That's his nickname. People were chanting DTP.
How much do you get paid to win a slap fight?
So I don't have an official tally, and I may be wrong. This is what I was told, and I may get yelled at for coming up with this number, which may not be accurate. But I was told by an unreliable source, like, you get $7,500 to show up, and then if you win, you get $7,500 more.
Oh, boy. $15,000 for brain damage. Okay.
If you win the coin flip and knock them out in the first shot, you didn't even get hit.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Like, I mean... Only Kyle Shanahan could screw this up, right? Like, I mean, you get the first shot, you got to have the advantage.
Well, it's hard to knock these guys down. They're good.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. There were a lot of them went to the scorecard. That was really disappointing because it's like.
But again, how do you train to withstand blows to the face?
You slap the bags and stuff like that. These guys have arms. They get their feet wide as they can. Yeah. That's a big thing. Yeah. You got to stay in the little. They got like a little box you got to be in, like the batter's box. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm telling you, high quality. And then when there's this drama, right? When you withstand a shot, it's better than like when the baseball team's running off after a half inning, you know, and you're safe. You can't get like you withstand the shot, and all of a sudden, the whole mood changes because they start going like, oh, I did it. And then the other guy's like, oh, no. Because now I got to stand here and get, there's no defense.
No, there's no defense.
It's going to take.
That's, right. I think, probably the thing I like least about it is you just have to literally stand still and just have somebody wail on your face and you can't do anything about
it. If you flinch, yet they get a second shot, too. Heavy penalty for the flinch. Sean Anderson, save me.
I think Pat and Ross are New Vegas.
They don't thank you. Yes.
They don't like America having some edge to it with an awesome slap fighting league. Mm-hmm. We need this. Is it extreme? Yeah, it is. But you come to Vegas, you're supposed to get a little bit freaked out. So I love it. I love the power slap.
They'd be like locking arms at the Celine Dion show.
Oh, this Elvis impersonator was really good. I thought it was like the real guy.
Oh, my God. This is a setup. Dan, how you coached Sean before we even started.
I did not. I just know Sean is reliable. Absolutely. It was fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
Sean and I, we actually did talk on the phone this weekend about that. Yes, it was great. Sean, you would go with your friends, right?
Oh, yeah. No, my issue would be me and my friends slapping each other in the audience.
Yeah, I mean, people were yelling at each other. There was almost like some, you know, that people get fired up. Then, like, guy on the prelim that won, he ends up in the stands drinking beers with the other fans.
Why like, not? You just got $7,500. Yeah, it's the show now.
Sean, did you ever power slap anybody in your bouncer role?
No. I got mashed a couple times really good at football, but that was just, you know, football. Other than that, kept it pretty clean outside with
Sean,
the
bouncer. This might be a sport for you, Sean.
No. I got big hands, but I got little forearms and small wrists. I think I would have too much bend back. They're not sturdy enough.
That is true. You might need, I don't know. I don't know what makes a good slap fighter.
Yeah, what are the good measurables?
Well, I'll tell you.
People that have worked for a living.
Some of the, like a brick mason or something. This man lays.
Not me.
Yeah, he's have brick. A meaty palm, huh?
That might be too much cushion. Might be too much cushion. Yeah. I don't know. Some of the guys were not the biggest one. There was this guy, Ryan King of Kings Phillips. He's a star. Absolute star.
King
the
of
nicknames
Kings?
Are good.
The King of Kings. The nicknames are unbelievable. Come on. Disturbing the Peace? This is a good name.
Hungarian Hurricane? I like
Hungarian Hurricane got buried, and she was the big hype. She was there. She had
That video was disturbing to me. I'm sorry.
She had smacked this woman last fight, and the woman somersaulted. So that had turned the Hungarian Hurricane into a big star. Everyone was very, very excited for Hungarian Hurricane. And then one thing about Slap League, you know, men and women, total equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you talk, it is, yeah.
You too can get brain damage for $7,500.
Most progressive, most progressive sport out there, UFC and Slap League. No separate.
How long?
There's no separate women's Final Four and men's Final Four. This is doing the same card. Everybody's equal.
Let's make it an NCAA sanctioned sport.
I was talking to someone in
the NCAA.
They
got enough concussion litigation right now, Pat.
Yeah.
I sent the one of the videos to somebody in college sports, and they're banned from betting on anything that has like NCAA sport. Yeah. And they're like, I can bet on this, right? Like even if you work anywhere in college athletics, you can't bet like MLB because you can't bet anything that has a So this
if you
about
get
it.
Knocked out, is there any like length of time before you can come back? Or they're like, yeah,
ten count.
Just come back tomorrow. No, I mean the next fight. Can you come back the next day? Can you come back a week later? Two weeks later?
We're not fighting again until April.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Probably.
This is
a real
care.
Operation, Let's, Pat. Power Slap cares about its athletes.
Of course.
Power Slap is awesome. I highly recommend it. It's going to be big. I'm telling you, you're going to be like, people thought when they were fighting in the cages, like this is human cockfighting and all. I don't care. Look how big that got. This is going to be big.
I still think it's human cockfighting.
Yes, I agree.
You know, cockfighting was very popular until
it was.
People were like,
it was.
Reminded of the Seinfeld episode.
Tamale. I don't know. Is it? I mean, it's not the best, but it's, you know. What's the like most peaceful sport, like race walking or something?
Yes, probably.
Chess.
So.
Chess golf.
Yeah, chess. Although, hey, you know, we know what goes on in chess.
That is
true.
We
do.
Butt
we
plugs.
Do.
Watch
involved
golf.
Involved
your rear end.
Have you seen the waste
end.
Management?
If you saw
open?
The waste management, golf is not
no,
on the list. That's
golf
right.
Golf is no
yes.
longer on the list. Yeah. We're all Man. Heading to. We're all coming to me. It's all heading to the power slap.
End this show.
All right.
Time to wrap up.
We'll be back later this week with more exciting stuff from college athletics and beyond. Talk to you later.